Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Tent Talks. It's Stacy, and I took a few weeks off for the holidays, so I'm glad to be back. And I have a special guest joining us, Marnie Robertson. Hi, Marnie.
Hi, Stacy.
Welcome to the show. We want to talk a lot about how, well, we've overlapped, mm-hmm. but in the areas that we've overlapped, we had the same meditation yep. teacher.
Yeah.
And we didn't even know it, but I was going to therapy in a house that you were living in mm-hmm. yep. with my and meditation classes, and you were probably there.
Yep.
And we discovered that like years later.
Yeah.
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 And so I think like meditation is such a like foundation mm-hmm. for the work I do.
Yeah. Yeah. And me too.
And you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah. let's just start at our foundation with meditation.
Yeah. That sounds great. Yeah. So this house, mm-hmm. this was Pam's house.
Pam Blackwell.
Yeah. At the time she was Pam Mays.
Yeah.
And then she went through the process of taking back her maiden name, Blackwell. But yeah. She was just this, I don't know, she was this little gravitational pocket in Provo.
Yeah. Prayer yeah. flags on her front porch.
Yeah.
Living right in like BYU community yeah. and hosting meditations on Sunday yeah. nights.
Sunday evenings. And she would just word of mouth like, oh, I'll invite some people and you invite some people. And some Sunday nights it was like 20 people in her tiny living room and we'd move the couch back yeah. and we'd all stuff in. And then sometimes it was like 3 people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Pam was kind of the first person that showed me spirituality in a yeah. way that was so meaningful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was that really like, resonates.
Yeah. I yeah. was always into astrology mm-hmm. and I always wanted to go visit a psychic.
Yeah.
And she like, well, here's my medium. She's in England. Yeah. Go talk
Let's
to her.
Let's pull up your chart. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I remember for me, I came in at this time where I had been like, I had been a church member and then I had been inactive for like a year in mm-hmm. college. And then I was sort of interested in being like an active LDS member again. Mm-hmm. And she kind of shone this light on like, oh, I can keep these like really cool spiritual things, like kind of more metaphysical ideas and be Mormon. Like, mm-hmm. and so, and for a time, that's kind of how I lived my life, like very spiritual and like inviting in these like really paranormal stuff and then practicing the LDS religion.
She was definitely a mystic.
Yeah. A yeah. Mormon mystic.
A Mormon mystic. And I was done with Mormonism by the time that I met her, but I felt like she kind of just helped me get a solid foundation of mm. spirituality when I didn't have one.
Yeah.
Because when you leave Mormonism, you're kind of like floundering. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are looking for a new belief system to attach onto. And I've always felt very like spiritually connected. And she helped ground that with meditation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of help you. Like for me, it was like helping me realize like, oh, I'm a spiritual being that like saying I'm a spiritual being having a human experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you've actually immortalized a lot of her meditations, but with your mm-hmm. own spin on them
yeah.
in your podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was a podcast I had for a year, year's worth of time, where every week I would just have a guided meditation.
And it's on Spotify. What's it called?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's on all platforms where you can find podcasts.
Yeah. I saw
yeah. Spotify. And it's called Raven Meditation. But yeah, some, especially the earlier ones are meditations that I sat with Pam on those Sunday nights and learned with her. And some of them, I think one of them was even dedicated to her. It's like a world compassion visualization.
Yeah.
And I dedicated it to Pam.
Pam has since passed away for listeners. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Last, the December before, so December 2021, she passed away and they had a memorial for her in June of 2022. So,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of meditation and getting a foundation, like What are some of the meditation practices that have stuck with you? And like, how would you help someone who's new or kind of overwhelmed by the idea of meditation?
Yeah. So something foundational for me, or something that's like always a fallback. And it's just like, it feels so simple. Sometimes I want to make it more complex than it is. It's like literally like counting my breath.
Yeah. Pam actually taught me to count my breath.
Yeah. Like she would always start us with breathe in through your nose for 6 counts, hold for 6 counts, and out your mouth for 6 counts. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes if I've stepped away from my meditation practice for a while and I'm getting back to it, I'm like, okay, just sit and do the 6 count breath for like a few minutes, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. That one's really big, foundational. And I don't know. I mean, breath is so important, but I think it's just like the habitual, like, oh, that one is just, we did it every Sunday night with her, no matter what other meditations or practices we tried. Always.
Breath as a breath. Beginning point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think something else she would do, she was often defining the difference between active meditation and passive meditation. Mm. And so like passive to her, passive meditation was you want to empty your mind of thoughts and you're really trying to sit in the present moment. And when thoughts come, you have like little techniques that kind of remind you to come back to the no thoughts, which is almost impossible. Mm-hmm. And then there was active meditations where you'd have a visualization or you would have a chant. And that to me is more of like what I've expanded my work on, is like giving your mind somewhere to go or something to make sense of what's going on inside. Yeah.
I feel very drawn to active meditation as well, because I think that for some people, it's near impossible to ever get to that place. Mm-hmm. And it might just happen even seconds before waking up or seconds before falling asleep, because some people's brains are just different. And we learn that through like neurodivergency, and even like human design talks about that, how some people's heads are just very open and susceptible to a lot of thoughts, and they might not even be their own thoughts. It's just like they're just tuning into like the collective chatter, and where other people have much more focused approach and it's easy for them to concentrate on things. And so to say to somebody, try to empty your mind, for somebody who just like is always open to that collective filter of like consciousness and thoughts and chatter, that to them, that's like telling a fish to climb a tree, you know, that analogy of like, it's just near, I wouldn't say it's impossible, because I think there's a lot of things you can do to quiet your mind. But for some people, that's just such a challenge. And it's such a horrible place to start with.
Yeah.
And intimidating with meditation. Like the point is not to completely quiet your mind. And like to get over that hump was so important for me, because I didn't think there was be any way I could quiet my mind.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think since that time with Pam, like there was that dichotomy, and I was like, oh, well, one day I will be able to do that, the passive meditation more, not more, but like I'll be an expert at it.
I'll master it.
I will sit for an hour with a very clear mind. And then I got into my program of school at the beginning of 2021 and had meditation classes. And then it was like this, oh, no, it's not so much this striving towards emptying your mind. It's actually striving towards acceptance of what is happening right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, whether you want to classify that as still the passive meditation or if it goes into the realm of active, it was really like, oh, there was this piece I missed, you know, the foundation was laid with Pam, but there was this piece I missed of actually we're not forcing anything. We're just trying to like name the experience as it happens. Mm-hmm. And then that's been deepened further. And we can get into this later with like the the learning I've had and the experience I've had with somatics, like with the body, like, oh yeah, I'm not just this mind floating in space that can clear itself if it just gets to this quiet moment. It's more like, oh, and then I'm a whole body. Mm-hmm. And actually, like, connecting myself with my body allows me to gain that acceptance.
Yes. I like to call it the elevator ride down from your brain to, like, into your body.
Yeah, which is so interesting because Pam would have those visualizations where you would ride the chakra elevator.
Oh, my
And you
gosh.
Would either ride it from the root up.
Or, yeah.
And have an experience that was, like, up above yourself, right? Mm-hmm. Or you would ride it down.
Yeah.
And that one is sometimes more effective for me. Ride it down. Get into the base of your humanity.
Yeah. I feel like my early meditation journey was kind of like I was susceptible to the idea of like, mm-hmm. you're going to get it and you're just going to get perfectionism and you just need to mm-hmm. buy this course,
yeah.
take this class. And I spent a lot of money on like meditation courses and classes, and nothing was as profound as the simplicity of like Pam's courses, like in her living room, free of charge, learning to like sit with my breath. And where I've come to now, especially as I've deconstructed like healing and the white wellness industry, but it's like healing is free. There's no magic ingredient. There's no superfood. There's no like special program. It's you, your body, your breath, and your mind.
Yes.
And that's like what healing is. And out of no matter your culture, your race, your income, your whatever, you can have a center of control and tools just with like what you're given. Mm-hmm. Like there is no like gatekeeping of like the celestial kingdom or like, you know, back to like a religious metaphor. But there's nothing that is saving just like these souls. Mm-hmm. It's like everybody is given the tools because they have a body.
Yeah. Yeah. The tools are inherently inside of yourself. And it's not even like pay this person to unlock these tools. It's, it's... here, I'm doing this free service, and maybe through that process, you'll just access your own wisdom, inherent wisdom. And Pam did this for free, like every Sunday for free. And she did a lot of work like that, that was free. And then she also did a lot of work where she was like making a living for herself.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think that was part of the quality of me wanting to do that podcast was like, oh, people can just listen for free. And the kind of cool thing about like having an ad at the beginning was like, maybe I'll make some money eventually down the road, but it's not because people are paying me for it. Like people who want to listen have to pay. And then since that time with Pam, I've tried to recreate like, let's do meditation night, meditation gathering. And I've done it a handful of times. And it's really good. And then there was like a time where I was like, well, I'm going to start charging money for it. But then that like never felt, it just never took off that way. Mm-hmm. And it was like, I don't think it's intended to be, at least for me, it's intended to be this place of like, we're all just a community doing this together. We can meditate together. And even the idea of like, I'm not going to be the only one teaching you. Everyone can come and have an idea.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No hierarchy in a meditation community group class.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love that. And I think that moving forward with the work that you're doing, like having a meditation foundation builds on every other concept that you're learning.
Yeah.
And sometimes we think of meditation as like this peak or this pinnacle that we reach. And it's like, no, it's the beginning.
Yeah.
It's the beginning. Like, just to be able to have tools to understand yourself and to slow down.
Yeah.
Get grounded.
Yeah. Pam would talk about neuroplasticity in the meditation nights. And I think like that idea has definitely, as time has gone by and I've learned more, I'm like, oh, like the foundation was like kind of setting up my brain and then my body, A, to connect to each other, and then B, to start to understand and integrate things, because I already had that foundation of like, can I just be? Can I just breathe? Can I accept my reality for what it is? Mm-hmm. And then all these other like things come in. And I know I'm being vague with like things, but they come in and there's then, like you said, a foundation, or maybe we could even say like a fertile soil.
Yeah.
A fertile soil to like, oh, we can put seeds in here now. Whereas like, I think if I didn't have that opportunity to have meditation, yeah, I don't think like a lot of things would have taken root in me. Mm-hmm.
Deepak Chopra, I took his primordial sound meditation, of course.
Yeah.
But one of the things that he would talk about is like, instead of your mind being this war zone, that it was a playground, and switching it to that was like the place of like where then he could teach manifestation and other things. But if your mind is at war all the time and these voices of attack and it's like the ego and the self just like always in war, then you can't do anything because you're in a state of battle.
Yeah. And bringing up like parts work.
Yeah.
And I know you like parts work. Yeah. But I'm just like, oh yeah, like I didn't even realize like just being able to like learn a compassion meditation. Like Pam taught us a compassion meditation, and it was kind of like this surprise ending where the last person you visualized was yourself.
And you were like, holy shit. And you're like,
oh shit, I never give myself that love. And I never have that, you know, capital S self, like saying these compassionate things to myself. So like what you're saying is like, I didn't even realize my mind warred with itself before I started like compassion work.
Yeah, because you have to have the awareness of like your thoughts. Mm-hmm. And like, oh, I'm actually can shift it. Mm-hmm. I don't just have to suffer through these like loops, the record on the same like track. I can turn it to a new song.
Yeah.
And I like to give the analogy that when you're born, it's like someone handed you an iPod with like all of your ancestors' favorite songs. and then you're like, and specifically like your parents and maybe what was going on during their marriage at the time, or like whatever their belief systems were.
Yeah.
You just get it with all of that music. And maybe like later down the road, you're like, I'm actually not a country fan. I'm a hip hop girl. And so you start like deleting some of the songs and putting in some of the ones you like. But then there are always like there's cherished favorites of like, I've got to have.
Yeah. And I'll remember the words of this. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to try and learn the new words of this new song.
Yeah. But you do have to rearrange what's in the iPod.
Yeah.
And you have to, you have to like, download some new songs and delete some old ones.
Yeah. I mean that, so that goes back to like the neuroplasticity.
Yeah.
That goes into the intergenerational, what you inherit and the trauma and like our DNA package.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of stories that I think, well, I've learned this through studying the nervous system, but your nervous system could be operating like 100 years back of what your ancestors, the same cycle that they were on. And I've noticed the patterns in my nervous system of what that looks like. And like some of my triggers, I'm like, this isn't even my trigger. I wasn't even born with this one.
Yeah. And that recognition of stories. And that's like something I actually like wrote down to like piece into, is this idea that we have like neuroception. So neuroception is like your nervous system is aware of something that you're not consciously, and it gets activated. And so, you know, whether that's the heritage, the 100 years ago something mm-hmm. that's being activated in your body by something in the environment or your own life trauma. And then you have a story. Like your neuroception happens and then you're like, I need to make sense of this. So I bring in the language I have and the story I have. And then the belief system. Yeah. And then you have to like use your discernment to be like, what's actually happening?
What's true here?
What's real? What's true here? What's real? Yeah, those stories can just like take you far away from actually what is happening.
An analogy I like with neuroception is like when you move into a house and it's like the first night in the house, you're awake every second with every new sound.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh my gosh, what was that? And it's like the fridge is making a new sound. You're like, okay, I've never heard that before. I didn't know what it was. And then like after a week or two in the house, you're sleeping through the night. Those sounds are still happening, but your nervous system, it's not paying attention to those things anymore. It's silenced those. So then on the reverse end of that is like your nervous system is picking up on things that your body and your conscious awareness doesn't even know. And like the other day I was having all this anxiety and I was like, oh, it's because it's raining in January. It's supposed to be snowing in January. And I was like feeling this, and I finally got to the root of it. It was like climate anxiety and like fear of avalanches. And lo and behold, the next day Sundance is closing and there's avalanches. And it's like my body was aware of that, but it started somewhere in my nervous system where I was like, something feels really off. It's causing me anxiety. What is it? Oh, it's the weather.
Yeah.
Why? Because it's not.
Well, I'm curious, did you have any like stories before that? That was like, what did I do wrong today to get me anxious?
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure. I'm like, yeah, I'm going through my day. I'm like, why am I anxious? What? Yeah, I'm talking. Yeah. I'm suddenly bringing awareness to my thoughts and to what I've been thinking and feeling based on my experiences throughout the day.
Yeah.
And it's nothing's matching up. It's like, oh, it's this factor that my nervous system knows that it's January.
Yeah.
In the winter.
So going back to the foundation of awareness, which is meditation work. Like you build awareness, self-awareness, awareness of what's happening. And you could have easily got caught up in something else that's not reality to explain your anxiety. But then you, through the process of like, let me just sit with this. Let me just explore this.
Unpack it.
Yep. Oh, this is like, I can see how the weather is not making sense. And boom, boom, boom. Story, like a story, then you that was your process of discernment.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't, in my opinion, you might not have been able to get there if you hadn't had that foundation of awareness.
Not. Definitely not.
Built through the meditation practice.
Meditation is so practical and it's like the benefits of it affect your life exponentially.
Yeah.
But sometimes it is hard to like, it's one of those hindsight things where you're like, oh my gosh, I'm doing this differently now because I'm able to have this relationship with what is, what's going on in my brain and my body. And I'm not like, sometimes I'm taking it personally, but I can have a step of removal or of observation before like taking it personally for too long.
Yeah. And I'll say like to anyone listening, even you can have meditated for 20 years with regular practice, and if your nervous system is still like ratcheted up or even the opposite, like dorsal vagal, you're like depressed
in bed,
you can get to that place and be in the stories. So I'm saying like our nervous system is so powerful that sometimes it can take us out of awareness still.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're not immune to life because you meditate.
Yeah. And that's right. Like if you look at like the philosophies behind meditation, that's the point. They want I don't know, quotation marks, but they want you to get to this place where you're like, and then I'm just accepting my humanity.
It is about humanity. That's the weird thing. Like, from an outsider perspective, before I meditated, I thought it was like getting to this higher plane where I, mm-hmm. where I was suddenly this enlightened spiritual person that didn't experience life. And it's like, no, meditation brings you back into life and says, I can be angry. There's yeah. reason to be angry.
Yeah.
And just get that out of the way.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like, things happen and then you have to navigate your way through them. So yeah. how are you going to navigate it?
Yeah. This brings to mind where my mind went was this. It's a Buddhist proverb. And they say the first dart and the second dart. But what it sums up is pain is the first dart and suffering is the second dart. So, like, the unavoidable discomforts of life and pain of life, inevitable pain, that's the first dart. And it's like, that's going to happen no matter what. And I think meditation is trying to teach you, like, acceptance of that. And then the second dart is like, you can get attached to it and then suffer. And meditation is also teaching, like, let's not get attached to it. Yeah, feel it. Pain is real. Pain, like, belongs in this human experience. But the second dart is this idea of, like, are you going to get attached to the pain and the suffering and then create your stories and, like, live in the non-reality?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I worked in the birth world for a long time, and we talked about, like, pain versus suffering in that context mm-hmm. of, like, there will be pain. But if you are suffering, yeah. that's a totally different thing. And that's when we really need to use, like, a lot more tools mm-hmm. in the birth world. But in basic Navajo tradition mm-hmm. and belief system, like, one of the foundational things is, like, there is pain. Life is hard. Mm-hmm. It's just, like, the rule. Life yeah. is hard.
Yeah.
And I just love getting that out of the way mm-hmm. because it's true for everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody yeah. just has their own flavor of what that looks yeah. like.
And I want to name that, like, you can get into meditation with this very real belief that it will save you from the pain. Yeah. I think I was in that yeah. for years.
And it won't.
And it won't. It's actually just trying to teach you how to live with the pain.
Mm-hmm. It's so compassionate.
Yeah.
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 Oh my gosh, Marnie, this has been a great conversation. Mm-hmm. And I want to pick it up in the next episode.
Yeah.
And talk more about where you're going after your meditation yeah. foundation.
I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, thanks. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. We'll see you next time on Tent Talks.